Welcome to the Illinois Labor Hour. This is your host, David Johnson, with Tom Thomas and Bob Pelesny. Welcome you to another edition of the Illinois Labor Hour, broadcasting from downtown Champaign on 90.1 FM and webcasting worldwide at www.weft.org. The views and opinions here expressed are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent or reflect the views of WFT, its associates, its station manager, board of directors, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois.
And the Illinois World Labor Hour is also supported in part by the Illinois Education Association Teachers Union and the Central Illinois Jobs with Justice. Building coalitions amongst unions, workers, and the community, the IEA and JWJ are proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. Well, folks, you've read about it in the Wall Street Journal. You've heard it on CNN and Fox News in particular, and it's the latest rage of buzzwords. What is it? Socialism. Stay tuned and find out on the Illinois Labor Hour what this word and all these phrases are meaning here. But first, the news headlines with Tom Thomas.
The Screen Actors Guild wants the government to become involved in its prolonged quest for a contract that is a great deal richer than agreements reached by Hollywood's writers and directors unions. The Actors Union's National Board, meeting last week for the first time since September elections, spun the Guild in a less confrontational direction and decided to ask for a federal mediator to join stalled contract talks with the major film and television studios. The National Board has decided not to put a strike authorization vote before its membership, at least not before they know for certain that negotiations can and will continue. The studios in July issued what they called a final offer to the Screen Actors Guild and have refused to reopen talks despite the Guild's repeated requests. Although the studios probably will have to accept the addition of a mediator, a spokesman said that a mediator may or may not make a difference. It's just a case of wait and see for members of the Guild. As contemporary American playwrights know all too well, getting a play accepted and produced is a formidable task. Even those who manage to get their creations on stage often find that the productions just don't last long at all. After the world premiere, no other theaters want to touch what they perceive as second best. With that in mind, the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation recently awarded nearly $10 million to playwriting organizations and theaters in hope of getting more fresh voices before audiences. Although Mellon has regularly contributed to theaters around the country for years, the recent grants are a result of a three-year study into the particular problems new plays encounter. It is obvious that developing plays is not the problem, but producing them is. According to Diane Ragsdale, the Mellon Foundation's program officer for theater and dance, new playwrights often get stuck in workshop hell. Supporting playwrights directly and creating long-term residencies at numerous theaters were among the recommendations that emerged with this latest Mellon grant. In spite of all the support the presidential candidates are expressing for renewable energy, alternative energies like wind and solar are facing big new challenges because of the credit freeze and the plunge in oil and natural gas prices. Shares of alternative energy companies have fallen even more sharply than the rest of the stock market in recent months, and the struggles of financial institutions are raising fears that investment capital for big renewable energy projects is likely to get a lot tighter. Alternative energy advocates are concerned that if the prices for oil and gas keep falling, the incentive for utilities and consumers to buy expensive renewable energy will shrink. That is exactly what happened in the 1980s when a decade of advances in alternative energy just collapsed amid then-falling prices for conventional fuels. Senator Barack Obama and Senator John McCain are both promising ambitious programs to develop various kinds of alternative energy to combat global warming and achieve energy independence. Whether these programs are just campaign rhetoric or not, will in reality benefit us remains to be seen. The Exelon Corporation's unsolicited bid to buy NRG Energy, a power generator based in Princeton, New Jersey, would create the largest power company in the country in terms of assets, market capitalization, and generation capacity, and would benefit shareholders of both companies, according to Exelon spokesman. However, the deal could also raise credit challenges. Exelon is assuming that because of bond covenants, sale of NRG would require Exelon to refinance $8 billion in debt. Excuse me. And the interest rates on that would run in the double digits. Executives held out some hope, though, that they might be able to renegotiate with current bondholders rather than refinance. The transaction would depress Exelon's credit rating, but it would remain investment grade, according to company executives, and within 2 to 3 years would return to its current level. NRG, with 44 generating stations spread across Southern California, Texas, Pennsylvania, Delaware, New York, and Connecticut, had no immediate comment except to say that it was evaluating the offer with advisors. And finally, Texas Instruments, which makes chips for cell phones and other microelectronic devices, announced last Monday that orders were slowing so rapidly it was going to have to cut jobs to save money. The company said it was reducing its workforce by 650 people in six different countries from a unit that makes chips for cell phones. Also, it is in talks to sell part of that unit, which has struggled because of a major drop in sales to a major client, Motorola. The company essentially met analyst expectations for third quarter earnings, according to figures compiled last week, but CEO Richard Templeton said order trends have been weak and getting weaker in the last few months. There have been other indications that the fourth quarter would be a bad one for semiconductor companies. Last week, TI's rival, Linear Technology, also warned of a large sales drop. The job cuts at Texas Instruments will come from the division that makes the so-called baseband chips, which beam a phone call to a cell tower. Company executives say the job cuts should save them $200 million a year. Dave?
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Workers at a luxury resort in Massachusetts will finally receive more than $14 million in tips. Jesse Russell reports.
Roughly 600 workers at a luxury resort in the Massachusetts Berkshires will be receiving $14.7 million worth of overdue tips. In a class action lawsuit filed against the Canyon Ranch Resort, employees claim that customers were discouraged to tip because it would be included in an 18% service fee attached to the bill. The employees claim they never received a portion of that service fee. The resort claims no wrongdoing but has agreed to pay out the $14.7 million to employees who worked at the resort between August 2004 through October 2007.
Keith Franco found out the hard way that all too often a worker's legal union rights aren't worth a thing when employers decide to violate them. Franco is hoping for an Obama win November 4th so the Employee Free Choice Act can be passed to put some real teeth into union rights. Franco tried to help organize a union at Cablevision in New York.
I've never felt so discriminated in my life. And my van was vandalized. My personal truck was vandalized. The words like union scum.
Cablevision was able to use a union-busting law firm to beat the workers' union organizing effort. But Franco has since quit Cablevision, and he's now in the second year of an ironworkers Local 46 apprenticeship in New York City. He's now paid nearly $32 an hour and has solid health, pension, 401k, and annuity benefits.
Everyone deserves a right to work under a union contract when they want to, and, you know, they should really pass the Employee Free Choice Act, so hopefully Obama will get elected, and this will go right through, and people will, you know, don't have to go through what I did, because, you know, no one should really have to go through the discrimination I did. It was horrific.
Employers on a Navajo reservation in Arizona will now be required to allow nursing mothers the opportunity to breastfeed or breast pump while on the job. The Navajo Tribal Council passed the law unanimously on Wednesday, and businesses now have 90 days to submit a written plan to the Tribal Labor Office explaining how they will handle the new law. The nation joins 13 U.S. states that allow such measures for nursing mothers.
Here is today's economic report. 41 states suffered monthly job losses in September. That is more than double the 18 states that reported job losses in August. Payrolls declined by 159,000 jobs last month. The United States economy has now lost jobs for 9 months straight. Michigan lost the most jobs, shedding 28,300. That state was followed by Georgia. The state to gain the most jobs was Missouri, only adding 3,800.
WIN's Labor News is now available right on your cell phone. Just dial 425-527-7001. Get your Wind Labor News on your cell phone at 425-527-7001. You've been listening to Wind, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Well, as the presidential race enters the final stretch, Senator John McCain and several of his key advisors have been sharpening a new line of attack against Senator Barack Obama, charging that his tax plan amounts to socialism. McCain first inserted the charge into an address he recorded for broadcast Sunday on talk radio stations.
My opponent's answer showed that economic recovery isn't even his top priority. His goal, as Senator Obama put it, is to, quote, spread the wealth around. You see, he believes in redistributing wealth, not in policies that help us all make more of it. Joe, in his plain-spoken way, said this sounded a lot like socialism. And a lot of Americans are thinking along those same lines. In the best case, spreading the wealth around is a familiar idea from the American left. And that kind of class warfare sure doesn't sound like a new kind of politics. In other words, Barack Obama's tax plan would convert the IRS into a giant welfare agency, redistributing massive amounts of wealth at the direction of politicians in Washington. I suppose when you voted against lowering taxes 94 times, as Senator Obama has done, a new definition of the term tax credit comes in handy. At least in Europe, the socialist leaders who so admire my opponent are upfront about their objectives.
Your radio address yesterday, you raised the S word, socialism, but you did it indirectly. So let me ask you for some straight talk. Do you think that Senator Obama is a socialist? Do you think that his plans are socialism?
I think his plans are redistribution of the wealth. He said it himself. We need to spread the wealth around. Now,
is that
that's
socialism?
That's one of the tenets of socialism, but it's more the liberal left, which he's always been on. He's always been in the left lane of American politics. That's why he voted 94 times against any tax cuts or for tax increases. That's why he voted for the Democratic resolution, a budget resolution, that would raise taxes on some individual who makes $42,000 a year. That's why he has the most liberal voting record in the United States.
But Senator, when we talk
is one of the tenets of socialism redistribution of the wealth? Not just socialism, a lot of other liberal and left-wing philosophies. Redistribution of the wealth? I don't believe in it. I believe in wealth creation by Joe the Plumber.
But Senator, you voted for the $700 billion bailout that's being used partially to nationalize American banks. Isn't that socialism?
That is reacting to a crisis that's due to greed and excess in Washington.
Joe the Plumber?
Yeah.
Socialism, it's come up on the campaign trail now.
Sure.
Governor, is Barack Obama a socialist?
I'm not going to call him a socialist, but as Joe the Plumber has suggested, in fact, he came right out and said, it sounds like socialism to him, and he speaks for so many Americans who are quite concerned now after hearing finally what Barack Obama's true intentions are with his tax and economic plan, and that is to take more from small businesses, more from our families, and then redistribute that according to his priorities. That is not good for the entrepreneurial spirit that has built this great country. That is not good for our economy. Certainly it's not good for the opportunities that our small businesses should have to keep more of what they produce in order to hire more people, create more jobs. That's what gets the economy going. So finally, Joe the Plumber, and as we talked about today in the speech too, he representing, you know, Jane the engineer and Molly the dental hygienist and Chuck the teacher and all these good, hardworking Americans who are finally, we're able to hear in very plain talk the other night what Barack Obama's intentions were to redistribute wealth.
Hi, since I've been studying politics, I've had this question that I've never fully understand. Why is it that someone like my father, who goes to school for 13 years, gets penalized in a huge tax bracket because he's a doctor? Why is that? Why does he have to pay higher taxes than everybody else just because he makes more money? Why? How is that fair?
You mean the progressive tax system?
I think you're questioning the fundamentals of a progressive tax system where people who make more money pay more in taxes than a flat across the board percentage. I think it's to some degree because we feel, obviously, that wealthy people can afford more. We have over the years, beginning with John F. Kennedy, reduced some of those marginal tax rates to make them less onerous. But I believe that when you really look at the tax code today, the very wealthy, because they can afford tax lawyers and all kinds of loopholes, really don't pay nearly as much as you think they do when you just look at the percentages. And I think middle-income Americans, working Americans, when you count in payroll taxes, sales taxes, mortgage, all of the taxes that working Americans pay, I think you would think that they also deserve significant relief, in my view.
I think his plans are redistribution of the wealth.
Is that
that's
socialism?
That's one of the tenets of socialism.
As President and Senators begin debate on the budget, I want to briefly discuss why at this time I cannot in good conscience vote in favor of tax cuts.
I voted against the tax cuts because of the disproportional amount that went to the wealthiest Americans.
The reason why I opposed the last round was because what I felt was a disproportionate favoring of the wealthiest 1%.
But the middle income tax credits, the families, the child tax credits, the marriage tax credits, all those I would keep. I voted against the tax cut.
Okay, that was a little. I want to thank Bob Plesney for recording those five tracks we played. You know, I got a couple of questions right off the bat here. First of all, are there two John McCains out there?
Well, some of those later tracks were from earlier, 2000, 2001, 2002. He sure seemed to be for a progressive tax system.
Uh-huh.
And also was voting against the tax cuts for the wealthy, you know.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
He seems to have changed his tune here in the last couple of months.
Oh, changed his tune. He changed the entire orchestra, if you will.
Exactly.
But, you know, my other question is, who in the hell is Joe the Plumber? I don't know any plumber that makes over $250,000 a year.
Me neither.
You know, and I mean, it's just funny. If anyone's watched the Colbert Report the other night, Colbert did a real good takeoff on that, and he said, yes, and they always, they're talking about McCain and Palin, Joe the Plumber, and then next they're going to be talking about Bob the Builder and yep. Dora the Explorer. You know, this is what's interesting is that, McCain, Palin in particular this time around, but also just the Republicans in general, they always try to convince working people that, say they're fairly comfortable middle class, you know, or even just maybe getting by halfway decent, that they're in the same boat, if you will, as somebody, like Bill Gates.
Making billions of dollars.
Yes, indeed, and trying to make them, seem like they're going to be also, taxed and everything. But, this has been quite interesting. Since this word socialism has been thrown out here in the last week, mainly by McCain and Fox News, I've seen that this one commentator on Democracy Now! The other morning has said that Barack Obama's approval in the polls have gone up since this. Now, is it a coincidence? Maybe. Who knows? But folks, since it's been quite the rage lately, we're going to be talking a little bit about socialism today. You know, socialism, socialism, socialism. I haven't heard that word used so much in the last couple weeks than I have probably my entire lifetime in the media,
They're using it as another boogeyman now, too.
Yes,
they got
to fear.
Some kind of a boogeyman up there.
Yes, and what's interesting is it's not working this time. That's what I find really fascinating.
Yeah,
we've been hearing this word a lot lately, and in particular, from John McCain and Fox News, basically accusing Barack Obama of being a socialist because he wants to increase tax rates for people who make over $250,000 a year. Now, there was a comment earlier. Now, all of a sudden, McCain's trying to imply that Obama's tax policy applies to anyone making over $42,000 a year, which,
yes,
of course, is ridiculous. But, I think it's important at this point, since the word's being thrown around so much, what really is socialism? I mean, the word socialism, socialism has got to be one of the most ambiguous words in the English language, at least in the United States, anyway. I mean, you ask any 10 people in the streets what socialism means, and I can guarantee you you'll get at least 9 different answers. I mean, and it doesn't help even that among people who claim to be socialists, I'm having a real difficult time saying that word for some reason this morning, both now and throughout history, that there are almost as many different definitions of socialism as Baskin Robbins has ice cream. But what is socialism, and what is it not? I mean, I guess. you know, to begin with, as Tom alluded to earlier, is that, you know, one of the most common misconceptions of socialism is that it's the same thing as communism. And in particular, the form of communism that existed in the old Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, and that still exists in modern-day China and North Korea, even though these people call themselves socialists, both currently in North Korea and China and in the past the Soviet Union, they're not real socialists. And these communist countries, both past and present, the government owned and controlled almost everything in terms of industries and businesses and maintained control by a repressive dictatorship. And the profits or surplus value produced by these enterprises, by hard work and ingenuity of the workers, enriched a never-ending network of Communist Party officials and bureaucrats. And while the workers received very little, you know, in terms of wages and benefits, and this is unlike
it
is
turned
not
into
socialism.
Exactly what they revolted against, actually.
Indeed, absolutely. Yes. Some people have called it state-controlled capitalism. Is what, and you look at China now. I mean, that's definitely the case. I mean, even more so than the past Soviet Union. And you know, it's, I always find it interesting that you know, according to the corporate media here in the United States, you know, China good, Cuba bad. You know, and you think about it, Cuba's never had a Tiananmen Square, you know, shooting their own people in the streets. And I'm not defending Cuba. I mean, but China is, I mean, it's got a horrible human rights record. But because there's all the multinational corporations setting up shop there and getting taking advantage of all the cheap and even outright slave labor, then all of a sudden
of plantations.
China's okay, you know, even though it's still a communist country. And you know, another common misconception of socialism is that it's fascism. I mean, I think one of the reasons for this is that you know, Adolf Hitler called his fascist Nazi government National Socialism, and real socialism was a very powerful and popular social movement in the late 1800s and early 1900s, in particular in Germany. You know, so Hitler, being a slick, deceiving politician he was before becoming an absolute dictator, used the popularity of the word socialism, but added national to the word. National is a key word here because that's one of the core principles of fascism, that a certain country or race is superior to everyone else in the world and that they have a right to attack, occupy, and control other countries. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah.
Fascism is also characterized by a totalitarian dictatorship where the police and the military have total control over citizens, and the large corporations have merged with the government, becoming one and the same as, quote, Mussolini, the corporate state. So, anyway, we got a song here by Ann Feeney we're going to play, and then we will be right back. Okay, Ann. Well, it seems like we're having a little problem here.
He rattled the earth, poured dust as thunder's condemnation of other worlds in birth. No more tradition strange shall bind us, arising slaves, no more enthrall. The earth shall rise on new foundations. We have been taught, we shall be. Tis the final conflict, let each stand in place. The international working class shall free the human race. Tis the final conflict, let each stand in place. Sending saviors to rule us from their judgment hall. We workers ask not for their favors. Let us consult for all to make the thief disgorge his booty to free the spirit from
Now, we come to that section of the program with Tom Thomas, and his poem of the week is Magic Night.
That magic night called Halloween is once again approaching town. Soon little goblins will be seen up and down all the streets around, celebrating All Hallows Eve, each dressing like their favorite ghost. Each child's goal is to achieve free candy from each neighbor host. You'll see some little skeletons, maybe a G.I. Joe or two, some cowboys packing their cap guns, and pirates from Captain Kidd's crew. A wonderful night it will be for most children around the earth, a night of generosity, of parties and haunting in mirth. It's a night when love's on its beat as the little ones are skipping happily down the city street, and the nectars of youth they are sipping. Yet there are other places where Halloween's not celebrated because the tragedy is there of illegal war unabated. There is a child in Baghdad who's not trick-or-treating tonight, who hides himself in fear and dread because he would be killed on sight. The only treat he might ask for is that his life and land be spared, but he can't knock on any door because he's too horribly scared. Happy Halloween, little victim. Written at the Poets Loft in Champaign, Illinois on October 24th, 2008, A Magic Night was first recited live on the Illinois World Labor Hour on October 25th, 2008 on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, community radio for East Central Illinois.
I've got a PSA here. Naomi Klein will give a MillerCom lecture on her book Shock Doctrine in Smith Hall Auditorium on October 29th at 7:30 p.m. There will also be a book signing at the Author's Corner in the Illini Bookstore on October 30th from 12 noon to 1 p.m. Dave?
Yes, and before the Naomi Klein talk, join the rally on October 29th at 4:30 p.m. on the steps of Follinger Auditorium. This rally is to protest the university's latest action. It's being sponsored by the Coalition of Campus Unions against university wage cuts, skyrocketing tuition, and attacks on freedom of speech. Student and campus workers united. That's October 29th at 4:30 p.m. on the steps of Follinger Auditorium.
It's time to end welfare as we know it and get those greedy chiselers off the dole. It's time to end welfare as we know it. Teach them a little self-control. For far too long we've allowed these corporate hogs to belly up to the public trough. No more welfare as we know it. No more handouts, cut them off. Now we should all be irate at this huge welfare state, right here in this mightiest of nations. AFDC is disgraceful to me. I'm talking aid for dependent corporations. Free enterprise, ha, the cruelest of lies. It cost us $200 billion just last year. If they paid their fair share, we'd have billions to spare. It's time to tell them the buck stops here.
Okay, that was Ann Feeney and her corporate welfare song. Well, kind of in a similar vein, we've got a couple of guests in the show to talk about a very important voter referendum coming up here on Election Day. Welcome to the show, Randall Cotton and Martel Miller.
Thank you very much, Dave. Thanks for having us on the show. Yeah, we're here to raise awareness about a referendum that's going to be on the ballot in Champaign for all Champaign voters. Two or three referendums, actually three at least, on the ballot. And one in particular that we're trying to raise awareness about is the one for raising property taxes, a small amount, to better fund the City of Champaign Township. Now, what the township does, the primary job of the township, is to provide general assistance aid. And that is a program to give financial aid to the poorest of the poor. This is like the last safety net available for people who are really down on luck. They don't qualify for any other state or federal aid. Their income is way below half the poverty line. It really is the poorest of the poor. And that program has been grossly underfunded, ridiculously underfunded for a long time. And last year, they had to even just completely abandon half of the clients. And the remaining clients' benefits were slashed about in half. In comparison to surrounding communities, comparable surrounding communities, Champaign does a really bad job. Urbana funds general assistance 730% higher.
7.5 times almost higher.
Right. And then if you go to Peoria, it's 1,280% higher.
12.5 times. Almost 13 times.
Right. And it just gets higher from there. Springfield, it's over 17 times. Bloomington, it's almost 19 times. It's just completely over the top. And you know, these numbers haven't really been dug out until recently, but when we showed them to the city council, which is the same body that oversees the township when they're in their dual role as township board members, they were embarrassed. Even the mayor said he was embarrassed last Tuesday.
Oh, that's quite amazing. That shows what how bad the situation is.
Yeah. And we tried to get a referendum passed a couple years ago with a higher increase, and that failed. So as a compromise, there's a lower increase now. The increase is 2 cents per $100 of assessed value of one's home. And what that actually comes down to, if you've got a median value home, about $150,000, it comes down to a grand total of less than $10.
Less than $10 a year?
For the whole year. That's right.
Okay.
So it's actually a very small increase to try and restore some. This won't even completely restore all of the cuts that were made last year.
Okay. Now, Martel, you've been working with Randall on this. Can you share some of your thoughts with us?
Yeah, I've been working with Randall. Randall did most of the paperwork, doing the research and everything, but I've been working with the township for over a year. One day I happened to be at the city council member and witness of something at the township with Linda Abernathy, and got with her after that and told her as long as she'll be the township supervisor, I'll make sure she's going to be in there by herself. I will come to a lot of township meetings and try to support her. Mm-hmm. And during that time, I've been getting a lot of people to come in and support the township, help out with a lot of things. And I see with Champaign how the Champaign government does stuff for the developers and the corporations, how they make sure they be supported and make sure they get everything, the incentives to help them, but they have nothing for the poor. And at one time, I don't know if they're still doing it, they was going to put $50,000 into a fountain, but they were willing to lend the township money,
mm-hmm.
but willing to just support the township by giving them something. They wouldn't do that. But
what's this transfer? I mean, as far as what's the actual amount someone gets from the township currently?
I think it's about $153, ain't it, Randall? $150.
How could someone live on that? I mean, that won't even. I mean, even for a single person, that would pay for groceries. And
yeah, may pay for groceries for a month.
Yeah. Oh, that's unbelievable. So, in other words, you said which one was the highest there? Bloomington, Normal. Or actually, the city of Bloomington. So basically, they're giving how much per month? And that's 20 times almost. So you're looking at $3,000 a month?
The state recommended amount is about $225 a month. And that's typically what townships give. I don't know whether that's what Bloomington, I would assume that's what Bloomington is given, if not higher.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, you said there's some other also important referendum on the ballot coming up here for the voters.
Well, the other two referenda that I know about are there's one for the Forest Preserve,
mm-hmm.
and you know I'm not really sure what that is, but and I haven't researched it, but you know if people are worried about raising their property tax, it's for the same amount.
Mm-hmm.
It raises it for the same amount, but okay. I mean, okay, money for forests mm-hmm. or money for the poor when we're just about to enter in a deep recession, according to most
mm-hmm.
people.
Mm-hmm. Trees versus people.
Right. Tree versus people. And, you know, the economic hard times, the downturn in the economic hard times is really going to severely affect the poorest of the poor much more than anyone else.
Yes, indeed.
So,
indeed.
You know, some city council members, when I talked to them at first, said, oh, well, you know, it's a bad time economically for tax cuts. But, you know, you have to take into account that the poorest of the poor are going to be affected most of all, and not only that, there's going to be more of them.
Indeed.
And the demand for the service. So this time, more than any other time, really, is calls for this.
Some of those homeowners might actually find themselves in that. Hopefully not, but I mean, they could very well find themselves in the same shoes as these people that currently need it. I think people need to keep
might,
that in mind.
Yeah, some of conceivably, I suppose. But if you've mm-hmm. got a home now, chances are that you're going to be better off than
well, yes, but I guess what I'm getting at
the
is
people
that,
who wind up getting general
you
assistance.
You know, somebody could be, you know, it's very conceivable somebody within a matter of however long's time, especially with the economic downturn coming our way, could easily be in these people's shoes. And they need to keep that in mind. You know, you could easily be where these people are now, and I think people need to reflect on that. Now, isn't there a third referendum on school funding as well?
Oh, yes, there is a referendum. It's a sales tax for a 1% increase in the sales tax.
Yes.
That's for all of Champaign County.
Okay.
And so no matter what city you live in Champaign County, it'll be on the ballot.
Okay.
And then there's also one to increase transparency also for the Champaign Township. But, I mean, that's like a no-brainer. That's, you know, that'll pass without any difficulty.
Oh, I'm sure.
It's just
sure.
a short little thing.
Okay, and one last thing as far as this township increasing assistance to the poorest of the poor. There hasn't, you know, I don't know, it seems like, of course, at the Unity Rally and everything a few weeks ago, and Linda Abernathy seems like she's really been pushing for this. I mean, she's really impressed me of actually really, you know, doing not just doing her job effectively, but really caring and going the extra yard here. But, I mean, it seems like the rest of the Champaign City Council have been lukewarm at best to this. Prior to your presentation the other night, anyway.
Well, yes, and as a matter of fact, in fact, there was an advisory referendum earlier this year, and the wording of that advisory referendum, it was put on the ballot by a citizen, a grassroots citizen effort. The wording on that ballot, on that referendum, urged the city council, or well, the township board, which is the same thing, quote, to restore the level of general assistance funding by actively pursuing any and all means available to them.
Okay.
But, you know, up until recently, and even, you know, I can even say it right now, there really has been no initiative by the board as a whole and by individuals to actually educate people and advocate for this.
Mm-hmm.
We've had to sort of pull it out of them by inviting them to the Unity March, by essentially, you know, asking them what their position was during the last city council meeting, by talking to them individually. They haven't really done anything on their own initiative. And actually, at least one of them will not support it.
Yeah,
Karen Foster won't support it.
Yeah. Any last words on this to the listeners you'd like to impart here before you guys take off?
Yeah, so one last thing. It's very hard to identify which referendum it is.
Really?
Yes, because nothing in that referendum, when you walk in the ballot, says anything about poverty or general. Well, it doesn't even say anything about general assistance.
How's it worded then?
Well, the wording of the ballot basically says, shall the limiting rate under the property tax extension limitation law for the city of Champaign Township be increased by an additional amount? I'm not even going to go out.
Yeah. I mean,
it's
I can tell
basically
what this
jargon.
Is.
It's yes. technical jargon, and it's
just
I think it's purposely
voters.
Yes. It's a consequence of the property tax caps law.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing in there about what the money's used for. You basically need to look for anything that says City of Champaign Township.
Mm-hmm.
Look for the word township.
And you
and
know
vote
the vote,
yes.
Okay.
And there'll actually be two of them that say that say township, but they both – one is just to increase transparency, which is a no-brainer.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming in, Randall Martell. I'm really impressed with all the work you guys have been doing. It's a very needed cause, and thank you so much.
Thanks for having us on.
I was a welder pulling down 40,000. For all I know, that job's in Pakistan now. I'm out working for that minimum wage and wondering whatever happened to the 8-hour day. Whatever happened to the 8-hour day? Who feeds a family now on one person's pay? I can't take much more. I just got one thing to say. Whatever happened to the 8-hour day? We got no time for the house, no time for the kids. An 8-hour week can put your life on the skids. I can't take much more. I just got one thing to say. Whatever happened to the 8-hour day? Whatever happened to the 8-hour day? Who feeds a family now on one person's pay? I can't take much more. I just got one thing to say. Whatever happened to the 8-hour day? The company keeps telling us we want.
Okay, we're back. And anyway, to continue on with our subject at hand here, Yeah, so, okay, so we've been hearing a lot of this word socialism thrown around, basically accusing Barack Obama of being a socialist because he wants to raise taxes modestly, I mind you, on people that make over $250,000 a year. But so anyway, we've heard kind of what socialism isn't, basically that it's not fascism, that it's not communism. So what exactly is it? And socialists share the belief... All socialists share the belief that whatever variety they are is that capitalism unfairly controls and concentrates power and wealth among a small elite segment of society that controls capital and exploits workers who create wealth. All socialists advocate that working people should have more control of wealth and power, and that society should be more democratic both politically and economically, and that all working people of the world should have this right. Also, socialists have a long history of opposing all wars except when a country is... directly attacked. And I think it's interesting that, you know, before the word socialism even existed, there seemed to be socialists throughout history. Some Christian socialists have argued that Jesus was the first and most famous socialist. Of course, the anarchists might disagree with that, but nevertheless, one of history's first glimpse of a socialist society is recorded by Luke, the book of Acts, in particular Acts 4, 32-35, where I quote, "There was not a needy person among them, for those who owned wealth sold it and brought the proceeds and laid it at the apostles' feet, and it was distributed to each as any had need." The Bible also has a passage that states, "It is as difficult for a wealthy person to go to heaven as it is for a camel to walk through the eye of a needle." And we also need to remember that Jesus not only fed and organized the poor, but he also threw the money lenders out of the temple of God.
Yes.
Boy, we could really use Jesus here with us today. In more recent times in Latin America, there were many priests and nuns who preached and practiced a form of Christian socialism called liberation theology. And throughout history, there have been Muslim, Jewish, and people of many faiths who have advocated socialism. And other historical examples of early socialism were Sir Thomas More's book Utopia, which was published in 1519, and the English priest John Ball, who led a peasant revolt in 1381. During the English Civil War, which occurred during the mid-1600s, there were political socialists called the Levellers and another group called the Diggers, both of whom advocated for the breakup of the large landholdings of the aristocracy. First successful revolution against monarchy and dictatorship was the American Revolution of 1776, which can be argued had socialist influences, at least in terms of creating a democratic form of government by the people and creating an institutional framework for individual rights and freedoms. And as perfect as it was at the time for not including women, African slaves, or Native Americans, but for its time, it was quite an innovative act. Though the Constitution did not address economic injustice, Thomas Jefferson has been quoted extensively during his lifetime about his fears of the threat to democracy in the future by extreme concentrations of wealth, which is also a primary concern of socialists. And in the mid-1800s in Western Europe, the term socialism actually began to be used for the political program of many trade unions and the working class movement for political and economic justice. First Socialist Party of the United States was founded in 1876. Most of the building trade unions in the U.S. during the 1870s until the First World War were heavily influenced by the socialist movement, both its rank and file and its leadership, including Peter J. McGuire, the founder of the Carpenters Union. Eugene V. Debs, another well-known leader from the Railroad Workers Union, was a socialist who ran for president several times, including the 1920 election when he was in federal prison in Atlanta for making a speech against U.S. entry into the First World War. And although he was in federal prison, Debs received over 1 million votes. Socialists of the United States had their biggest success in the city of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. From 1892 to 1960, the Socialist Party in Milwaukee either controlled the entire city government or at least had a presence. The 1960 was the last socialist in city government in Milwaukee was the mayor. Winning, they won election after election for mayor and city council seats. Victor Berger was elected to the U.S. House of Representatives for several terms from southern Wisconsin as a socialist. He was the first socialist in the House of Representatives. And modern day times, Bernie Sanders from Vermont was elected as a socialist to the House of Representatives and now is in the U.S. Senate. Socialist candidates in Milwaukee, though, received many votes from non-socialists and even small business owners who were fed up with the widespread corruption, high taxes, poor quality infrastructure, and public sanitation that was created by decades of Democratic and Republican rule. Once in office, the socialists honored their campaign promises. They saved taxpayers money and at the same time expanded and improved city services by completely eliminating corruption. The socialists also introduced more accurate accounting and budget methods, as well as fair and honest hiring and promotion of city employees that involved direct hiring instead of the old, corrupt, privatized contracting system. Anyway, there was a big split in the socialist movement during World War One, and I really don't want to go into a lot of this history. There's so much information on here, and if listeners would like to get into this more, you go ahead and Google socialist, and I'm going to warn you, you're going to get a mountain of information. And the important thing, though, about these splits in the socialist movement that World War One seemed to be a catalyst for, it was the main one between the socialists and the communists, which intensified even more after the death of Lenin in 1924, when you had Joseph Stalin, who took over and who basically created the current form of communism, which was a total dictatorial state that's most familiar to people during the Cold War and still exists in North Korea and China.
Stalin was Russia's Bush.
Well, that's an interesting comparison. He was a lot more intelligent than George Bush, though.
Oh, absolutely.
I could probably compare Stalin more to Karl Rove.
Was more intelligent than Bush.
Yes, but a little known fact of history is that the socialist movement in Germany is the one is really the cause of what ended the First World War. And how this happened was that the socialists in Germany organized general strikes in 1918 throughout Germany against the war and the Kaiser. Which inspired the German Navy to mutiny en masse and the majority of the German army to stop fighting and return home. This caused the Kaiser to flee the country, and a revolutionary German government was declared that was basically mainly the socialists who were in control and who had the prime minister. And within a matter of days after taking power, they signed the armistice that ended the First World War. So back to contemporary times. It is quite a stretch to accuse Barack Obama of being a socialist when all he really wants to do is increase the taxes modestly on people that make over $250,000 a year. But what's really interesting is that on Democracy Now! The other day, since McCain and Fox News have been calling Obama a socialist, that his approval rating has increased. Now, I don't know if this is a coincidence or not. It'd be quite funny if it wasn't. But nevertheless, it's really interesting. What I think is the most amusing about this whole thing is that, of course, McCain and Republicans have been trying to use this as a club to beat Obama over the head with, and I think it's definitely backfired on him.
Yeah, Dave, I got a chart here that lists some of the, as we were talking earlier, about the progressive tax rates we have in this country.
Oh, yes.
And currently the highest tax rate is 35%. And back in 2001, 2000, it was 39.6 or 39.1%. And I believe that's pretty close to where Obama wants to raise it back up to again. But throughout our history, we've had much higher rates on that that upper income bracket, especially like sometimes during war periods. Back in World War One, people were paying about 73% of their taxes.
World War One?
Yeah, back in 1917, 1918, wow. It was 73%. And then it dropped down in the 20s and stuff. Then started going back up in the 30s, 63%, 79%. Back in 1944, 1945, the upper income bracket was paying as much as 94% in taxes,
I wonder how much that they actually really paid, though, what I'm saying?
Well, it's as that comment John McCain made earlier, there's tax loopholes and tax lawyers to get them out of paying those taxes.
We got to can afford to buy their way out.
Right.
You know, Tom and I have a friend in Chicago who believes in a double gonger theory. Basically, there's a lot of people in both politics and entertainment that actually have doubles for various reasons. So we must be talking about that was McCain's double. He must have buried him in a somewhere, and this new one has come out or something.
And as recently as like 1951 and 52, we were paying 91% and 92% in that upper income bracket, So
that was to finance Korea, probably.
Probably. So raising it slightly here from 35% to 39% is minuscule in the big picture of the things. And it certainly is not a change in any American policy to tax our rich people a slightly higher amount,
Yeah, yeah. This is just you know, how can I say it? It's just well, it's outrageous. I mean, you know,
yes, it is.
You know, to use this argument, you know, but heck, you know, I wish we did have a socialist candidate running for mayor, actually, because frankly, I think even if they didn't win, it would really, if nothing else, it would kind of make interesting debates anyway. But anyway,
wasn't that why Bishop Romero was assassinated in El Salvador? Was because of his preaching
liberation theology,
like type.
Yeah, Christian, it was basically liberation theology is what he was preaching, why he was killed, and basically the basis of it is that the poor, you know, have a right to defend themselves and have a right to try to better themselves in life, and of course, you know, the ruling class and the military didn't want, you know, that was subversion to them because they wanted to keep the peasants, you know, subdued and definitely exploited.
Because the CIA was owned by the corporations.
Yeah. So, anyway, we're going to hear a little bit of Chumbawamba. This is extend this out to the actually the ruling class in this country. So, here we go.
Your name, don't break the cycle, pass it along by word of mouth, save the world, don't leave the house, because a virtual office in a virtual home means you never have to drive through the wrong part of town. Pass it along by word of mouth, save the world, don't leave the house.
Pass it along.
Don't leave the house.
Pass it along.
Don't leave the house. Security gates. Shut out the world, it's getting worse. Save yourself, don't leave the house, because a happy future is a thing of the past, and there's always another repeat. Shut out the world, it's getting worse. Save yourself, don't leave the house.
Okay, you're back, and that was Chumbawamba. And anyway, yes, so this whole thing about socialism that we've been hearing all over the place and everything, you know, frankly, there's never been a real socialist government ever in power. I think the closest thing we've ever seen is like in after World War II, up until fairly recently, there were several countries in Western Europe that had elected socialists, which really they were more social democrats. But Sweden is probably one of the closest countries that's ever come with their one of the thing about the socialists when they did get elected into government in various countries. They've been in power in Sweden, Norway, Germany, Belgium, France, Italy, I mean Spain, so and Greece. But one of the characteristics of their programs, of course, is that social welfare, or basically citizen support, however you want to phrase it, basically this involves you know, free health care, free daycare, free college education, as well as everything in between daycare and college education. 4 to 6 week vacations. I mean, is this a bad thing? Maybe John McCain may think so. Now, it is true. My wife's a German national. She grew up in Germany, lived there until she was a young adult. And, you know, she gets into this conversation a lot with people that say, yeah, but you guys pay 80% in taxes. Well, that's not true. And it is true that European governments, that European peoples pay higher tax rates. But it's like my wife tells these people, how much do you pay here in taxes, she asks. You pay like around 15 to 25%. You know, you include everything, you know, payroll tax, whatever. She says, what do you get for it? You know, what do you get for that rate? We pay about 40%, and we get all these things, health care, daycare. I mean, even services for the elderly. You know, a good film I would recommend to continue on this topic is Michael Moore's film Sicko, in which a big segment of it is where he's in France and England, and especially his segment in France where he's showing exactly what the people get for their money. But we're going to end. I guess socialism has reemerged, though. I mean, what happened was a lot of these so-called socialist parties in Europe after the Cold War was over started to slowly but surely be manipulated by large corporations, and they started banning their constituents, more or less, whittling away and dismantling the social welfare system, supporting globalization, which caused massive job losses. And what happened was socialism started to actually reemerge in Latin America as of recent times. In 1998, Hugo Chavez was elected to Venezuela, and he was followed in Bolivia by Evo Morales, and then Carrera in Ecuador, and even in a couple other countries in Latin America right now, in South America, Blanchet in Chile, and also Lulu in Brazil. But they have a varying spectrum here. Of course, Morales and Chavez, I would say, would definitely be closer to the real item as opposed to Blanchet and definitely Lulu. But anyway, well, thanks for tuning in to the Labor Hour, and I hope this maybe has helped the debate, hopefully, that's been going on. We're going to leave you with a timely song by the Black Eyed Peas.
Sure, we need an antidote and a cure. Cause do you really think Muhammad got a problem with Jehovah? We don't want war. Imagine if every prophet was alive and current days amongst you and I. You think they would view life like you and I do? Or would they sit and contemplate on why do we live this way, act and behave this way? We still